Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'll be reading you from Thought for Food for June of 2011. And during June of this year, we'll observe Flag Day on the 14th, which is Betsy Ross's birthday. Father's Day falls on the 19th, and summer begins on the 21st. Summer may officially begin on the 21st, but we've already had more than a few days with summer high temperatures. June is also National Dairy Month. It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that any food that's natural or organic is good for you. It may be, but often it is not. Most food manufacturers overuse the term natural. I've even seen the word natural on the label of a can of green beans. There's no legal definition for the word natural. There's a general understanding within the natural foods industry that natural foods are foods that are processed as little as possible, contain no artificial flavoring, colors, or partially hydrogenized oils. These are standards that are voluntary, though, so a product labeled natural may or may not be natural. It's also possible to purchase natural junk food, natural candies, toaster pastries, frozen desserts, and chip snacks, while natural contain little in the way of nutritional value. So when it comes to figuring out what's good to eat and what's not, assess the big picture first. Look for foods that are, in general, lower in sodium, added sugar, saturated fat, and trans fat. Check nutritional labels for dietary fiber content and go with foods that are highest in fiber. Then after these goals are met, then it's okay to refine your choices further. That's where natural and organic may enter the picture. A bit of pink in pork appears to be okay after all. According to a new U.S. Department of Agriculture guideline, an interior temperature of 145 degrees for cooking pork and other whole cuts of meat should be cooked. If you use a centigrade thermometer reading, it would be 68 degrees. That's a change from the agency's long-standing guideline and means pork will be held to the same standard as beef, veal, and lamb. For chefs, it means that the USDA has sanctioned what already was common practice. I'm glad they have the sense to make the change, said Rob Whelan, a chef at the Postmodern Brasserie, an upscale restaurant in Washington, D.C., Whelan said he had always cooked pork to the lower temperature because chefs knew it was safe and the meat clearly tastes better. But he said it would take years for backyard grillers to adjust to the change. People have been taught this for generations. It's going to take a long time to get this removed, he said. It'll be good for the next generation not to be so fearful so they can enjoy pork in a way that they may not have been able to in the past. With its lower temperature recommendations, the USDA also calls for letting the pork rest 3 minutes after removing it from the grill or oven. The meat's temperature will remain constant or rise during that period, killing any pathogens. With a simple temperature for all whole cuts of meat and uniform 3 minute stand time, we feel it'll be much easier for consumers to remember and result in safer food preparation, the U.S. Department of Agriculture Undersecretary Elizabeth Hagen said in a statement. C.C. Snyder, the vice president of marketing for the Des Moines, Iowa-based National Pork Board, said restaurants are regulated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which has allowed the lower cooking temperatures for a decade. The USDA made the change after several years of research and talks with producers and food safety experts. Producers proposed the change in 2008 based in part on new production methods that reduced the risk of pathogens, Snyder said, citing improved feed and housing methods. Like Whelan, the Washington chef, Snyder said it would take time for people to feel comfortable eating pork with a touch of pink. Those myths dry hard, he said. Despite the new recommendations, ground meat will still be cooked to 160 degrees and all poultry must be cooked to 165 degrees. I know from my own experience, I've cooked a bonus pork loin to that 160 temperature reading and the roast was overcooked and dry. Today's pork is so different than the pork of the day when the old standard was set. Marianne Leela has four large upright freezers filled with berries. Floor-to-ceiling bags of blueberries, cranberries, black currants, and purple muscadines. But those berries are not for making pies or jams. A world-renowned berry expert, Leela studies the health benefits of blueberries and other berries as head of North Carolina State's Plants for Human Health Institute in Kannapolis, where what was once a textile mill is now a state-of-the-art research facility. After her breakfast routine of blueberries and oatmeal, Leela heads to a research lab, and there, high-speed chromatography machines hum and whir, and flasks of berry juice line the lab bench. Berries provide big benefits in a small package, Leela says. Although some say superfruit claims are overhyped, but Leela says modern science backs them up, especially for berries. Studies suggest berries may help prevent disease, slow aging, enhance endurance, and fight infection. With funding from the National Institutes of Health, Leela is now trying to identify the special compounds behind the medical powers and understand how they work. Marianne Leela is truly a modern medicine woman. Her 25 research career has taken her far beyond the berry fields of North Carolina or the University of Illinois, where she worked before being lured to North Carolina State. From the cloud forests of Ecuador to the southern African savannas to the heights of the Himalayas, Leela has traveled the world in search of wild berries, rarely known in the United States, but known by traditional healers to protect and enhance human health. We ask shamans and medicine men in the countries where we work, what plants do you use as medicines? And then we back up traditional knowledge with science, she says. Every summer since 2008, Leela's research team has traveled to the coast of Alaska near the Arctic Circle, and there local villagers show her where to pick wild Alaskan blueberries, black crowberries, and delicate red salmonberries, most of which are unknown in the lower 48 states, but are common in the spongy, mossy tundra. More than just favorite fruits for jams and jellies, her native guides explain, these berries are also valued for medicinal purposes. Because these plants grow in the wild, Leela says, they contain extra higher doses of stress-fighting chemicals not found on farms. That makes them ideal for pinpointing which chemical or combination of chemicals explain their healthful effects. The cultivated berries you buy in the supermarket are good for you, too, but studying wild berries helps us zero in on what compounds are important, Leela said. She points to a bowl of plump purple blueberries. Hidden within the purple pigment lies a part of the secret behind their health-enhancing properties, a group of molecules called anthocyanins. More than 100 anthocyanin researchers from around the world will converge on Kannapolis in September to attend the International Workshop on Anthocyanins, the first time the conference has been held in North America. The plant pigments that make raspberries red and blueberries blue, anthocyanins, are also powerful antioxidants and anti-inflammatory agents, Leela says. Antioxidant-rich foods are thought to slow the natural breakdown of our tissues that comes with illness or advancing age, she explained. In Alaska and other parts of the globe, Leela is helping to train local scientists and students to test plants for antioxidant activity and other properties. The researchers crush bits of fruit, bark, or leaves to prepare plant extracts in the field, and then they analyze them using portable screening equipment. When field assays identify promising plants, the researchers do follow-up studies in their lab, and there Leela and her colleagues are using chromatography and magnetic imaging to analyze the berries on a molecular level. Once you know which plant compounds have effects on our cells, then you can pinpoint if you freeze them or cook them, do they lose their bioactivity? In some cases, Leela is discovering bioactive compounds that scientists didn't know berries had. She's also finding a lot of truth in traditional wisdom. Native Americans in the Great Plains of the Dakotas, for example, have eaten wild berries such as buffalo berries and June berries for centuries, Leela said. Today, with traditional diets falling out of favor, diseases such as obesity and diabetes are on the rise. We're verifying the very anti-diabetic property of these berries and finding that the elders were correct. It really validates their native diet, she said. Working with the complex chemical cocktail in blueberries and other berries, Leela is particularly interested in their ability to counteract a condition known as metabolic syndrome. the expanding waistline, insulin resistance, and high blood pressure that are precursors to heart attack, diabetes, and stroke. Various extracts have been shown to slow the growth of fat cells and lower blood sugar in laboratory tests with mice. Berry extracts actually dropped blood glucose levels after eating as rapidly as a popular anti-diabetic drug, Leo said. Berries are good for brain health, too. Just down the hall lies the lab cells culture facility, where Leela and her team are studying the ability of berries to protect against neurodegenerative diseases such as Parkinson's. Your grandmother probably told you to eat your fruits and vegetables, Leela said. There's a good reason for that. Plants offer multiple health benefits that drugs and supplements just can't. We're fortunate here in North Carolina. The blueberry harvest is coming to market, including the rabbit eye blueberry, a species native to the southeastern United States. That's good news for berry lovers. It means you don't have to travel far to find berries, whether baked, frozen, or eaten straight off the bush. During the summer months, we often try to take some time for a vacation, a break from our normal pattern of living. Sometimes it may be for a couple of days or a long weekend. Some recent publications inform us of many food festivals that take place around the country and within our home state. This type of outing may appeal to you. They often come complete with entertainment, vendors, and various contests. And I'll pass along to you a bit of information about some of the possible events you might be interested in. We're a little late for the Liver Mush Festival, which was held in Marion on May the 27th. The Blue Ridge Barbecue and Musical Festival will be June 10th and 11th at Harmon Field in Tryon, with music, crafts, and a fair, plus a barbecue championship with cooking teams from all over the country. Admission is $7 for adults. We have mentioned blueberries. The North Carolina Blueberry Festival will be June 18th in Burgaw. There will be a cycling event, a 5K run, a car show, entertainment, and blueberry recipe contest. Food vendors will be available. Our friends in South Carolina have the 41st Ridge Peach Festival in Trenton, South Carolina on June 18th with arts and crafts, carnival rides, peach products, and a parade. Trenton is located on I-26 near Columbia. And across our nation, the International Biscuit Festival was held May 27th, 28th in Knoxville, Tennessee. Which baker will rise to the occasion and make the tastiest biscuit? The winner last year was Fat Elvis, a peanut butter, banana, and bacon creation. The Georgia Peach Festival will be June 3rd to the 11th in Fort Valley. And what do you get when you mix 150 pounds of flour, 75 pounds of butter, 150 pounds of sugar, 32 gallons of milk, and 75 gallons of peaches? The result is the world's largest peach cobbler, measuring 5 feet by 11 feet. Other June festivals include the Lebanon Strawberry Festival in Lebanon, Oregon, June 2nd to the 5th. This festival began in 1909 when blue strawberries cost from 2 to 4 cents a pound. 1,000 pounds of those berries go into the fest's main treat, a shortcake that feeds 15,000 people. The Rhubarb Festival will be June 4th in Lanesboro, Minnesota. There will be games and foods from soup to nuts and rhubarb bread. At the same time, the Great Chowder Cook-Off will take place in Newport, Rhode Island. There will be prizes for the best chowder in three divisions, clam, seafood, and creative. I'd like to try some of all three kinds. I like clam chowder. Just speaking of these festivals makes me hungry. When the weather turns warm, many of us turn to outdoor cooking. To most of the country, they refer to this as barbecuing. But here in the Southeast, barbecue is a noun. We eat barbecue. A recent newspaper story tells of an answering service offered by the Weber Grill folks. My son-in-law has a Weber Grill and feels it the very best. And here's a part of the story. Man, meat, fire. This is supposed to be foolproof formula, but the guy at the grill is frantic. He has a yard full of hungry guests and is fumbling to get the gas grill flaming properly. It's a Memorial Day weekend nightmare that calls into the very essence of his suburban manhood. So quietly he dials the Weber Grill hotline for help, and Janet Olson's on the phone. Quick, I need to talk to a man, he says curtly, for Mrs. Olson, 67, is yet another caller insisting that no woman could possibly grasp a grilling issue. With 14 years on the job, she calmly explains she'll be able to handle the problem. If the man is especially upset, she suggests you might want to grab a beer and then just listen for a while. At the Weber Hotline Center, Memorial Day weekend is the busiest week of the year as thousands of befuddled grillers, overwhelmingly male, are being rescued by a team of about 40 grilling experts, almost all of them who are women. Olson, who was widowed at 51 and has pictures of her grandchildren on her cubicle walls, doesn't rattle easily. "I'm good at what I do," she said. "I don't cry, unlike some of her male callers, though I have thrown a headset." The male dominance of the grilling world has traditionally been regarded as a legacy of the caveman ethos, the notion that controlling fire is a way to master the universe. But Elizabeth Carmel, a barbecue chef who operates a website, girlsatthegrill.com, sees another explanation. Until 1980, when gas-powered grills emerged, cooking out meant working with charcoal, and building a charcoal fire was dirty work, a man's work, she said, but that's changing. Cooking barbecue was known as low and slow, cooking at lower temperatures for longer periods of time. Grilling is conducted at high levels of heat for short periods of time. Grilling soared with the post-war suburbanization, and you can make a great barbecue on a little backyard grill, says Carmel, the executive chef at the Hill Country Restaurants in New York and Washington, D.C. It's the knowledge, not the size, that really counts. The Weber Grill Academy, which opened in January, includes a large lecture hall that could fit into a Big Ten college campus. The school is headed by Kevin Coleman, who is 33 and has a master's degree in education. He's an affable but no-nonsense instructor who expects his students to study the material and do their best on quizzes. Many of the students are people who work for retail companies that sell Weber grills. If you're a griller, we wish you good luck when you have your grill heated up. Researchers at UNC Chapel Hill have found that young adults may be more likely to have high blood pressure, traditionally a problem for older people, than previously thought. The researchers think that the growing national problems with diet, obesity, and sedentary lifestyles are largely to blame for the increase. This study appeared recently in the journal Epidemiology. Researchers tested more than 14,000 people between the ages of 24 and 32 and found that nearly 1 in 5 had high blood pressure, nearly 5 times the rate found in an earlier study. High blood pressure, also called hypertension, is a factor in heart disease and strokes and is easy to overlook, particularly in younger adults who might not be aware that they're at risk. Said Kathleen Mullen Harris, who is co-author of the paper and interim director at the UNC Chapel Hill Carolina Population Center. She called the findings evidence of a sleeping epidemic. "We tend to think young adults are rather healthy, but a prevalence of 19% with high blood pressure is alarming, especially since more than half did not know they had high blood pressure," she said. The data for the report was derived from the larger national longitudinal studies of adolescent health that's been tracking the same group since 1995 when they were ages 12 to 19. When the study began, 11% of them were obese. 5 years later, that had climbed to 22%, and by the time the blood pressure data was taken, 3 years ago, 37% were obese and about 60% were overweight. The revelations about high blood pressure, Harris said, underline the importance of studying health in young adults who are at a stage in their lives when they're still forming behavior patterns such as eating habits and exercise that will affect their health over the course of their lives. Processes that lead to hypertension and chronic illness begin early in life when young people began to make their own lifestyle choices and develop healthy health habits, she said. If you can intervene early in life to reduce risk, we will avoid health problems for millions of people. There's a lot of valuable research taking place in the universities in North Carolina. People are paying more to fuel up these days on coffee. For high-end prepared drinks to store-brand ground beans, coffee prices increased, have outpaced even the rise of gasoline prices in the last year. J.M. Smucker, the maker of grocery store stalwarts Folgers and the packaged varieties of Dunkin' Donuts coffee, says that it's raising prices on most of its U.S. coffee products by 11%. its fourth increase in a year. Kraft Foods and Peet's Coffee have also recently raised their prices for brewed and packaged coffee. Starbucks confirmed that it will raise the prices for bagged coffee sold at its U.S. stores by 17% effective July the 12th. But for many, myself included, coffee remains an essential part of our diets. Ebony and Tyson Owen said they've noticed coffee prices rising, and they aren't about to give up coffee, but they're buying different brands depending on what costs least among their top four preferred brands, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Godiva, and Seattle's Best. I'm a Starbucks fan, I swear by it, said Ebony Owens, who is 32. However, if something else is on sale or has the coupon available, she'll switch. We won't go bottom of the barrel, though, Tyson Owens, 31, said during a recent grocery trip in Portland, Oregon. A pound can of ground coffee sold for $5.10 in April, up 40% from $3.64 the year before, according to the Department of Labor. By comparison, a gallon of regular gasoline costs $3.83 on average, up 37% from a year earlier. And in contrast with expected stabilization in fuel prices, the coffee increases will continue for a while because prices coffee companies pay for unroasted beans are still climbing and fast. Coffee futures were trading at $2.61 per pound on May 24th, roughly double a year earlier. The rise in coffee prices has roots in the growth of China, where upwardly mobile workers are fueling escalating demand. Some of the major exporting countries, including Indonesia, are suffering from smaller crops this year because of drought, flooding, or other inclement weather. Although overall coffee crops increased 8% last year on strength of supplies in Ethiopia, the Ivory Coast, and other countries, according to the International Coffee Organizations. Unlike many other discretionary items, coffee usually emerges from a recession relatively unscathed, the economists say. That's because when money is tight, people may buy cheaper brands of coffee, but they won't give it up. Americans consume 21.7 million 60-kilogram bags of coffee in 2008 during the depths of the recession, up from 21 million the year before, according to the International Coffee Organization. Smucker said in May that its latest price increases include Smucker's Millstone and Folger's Gourmet Selections packaged coffees. For the Dunkin' Donut brand, the increase affects only packaged coffee sold in stores. Items sold at Dunkin' Donut shops are not a Smucker product. Kraft Foods, which sells Maxwell House coffee, cited rising coffee prices and a broad increase it levied this winter. On a recent visit to Northern Virginia, we visited a Wegmans supermarket. My stepson told us we're going to visit the Cadillac of supermarkets. Wegmans, a chain that's privately owned, it's not on the stock market, is based in New York State. For a person who spent nearly 40 years in supermarkets, this was truly an eye-opener. This store, located in Fredericksburg, Virginia, is a large one, 145,000 square feet of floor space, about twice the size of most supermarkets. They had a wide variety of both fresh produce and fresh meat, and where an area that they were promoting is prepared foods. They're taking advantage of the habit of not knowing what we'll have for the evening meal by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They offered a wide variety of prepared foods that could require just heating to be placed on the dinner table. We purchased a container of braised collards seasoned with smoked turkey, and they proved to be delicious. I was impressed by the staff, who offered tastes of almost any of the prepared menus. The staff seemed to be well-trained and were able to answer the questions we asked. And while they displayed a lot of private label items, they also had the more highly advertised items we expect to see. As far as I know, this store is the furthest south the Wegmans chains is located. I think they would do well here in the Triangle. Sanderson Farms, which said this year that it would build a poultry processing plant near Goldsboro, has expanded its site search to include areas near Rocky Mount. The Mississippi company had focused on Wayne County, but is now looking further north in Nash County. Sanderson needs about 1,000 acres where it can build a processing plant and a spray field for the plant's treated wastewater. It will be near Goldsboro in some sense of the world, whether it's 5 miles out of town or 20 miles, we don't know, said Mike Cockrell, Sanderson's chief financial officer. He said the company expects to choose a site as construction on the plant was scheduled to begin this spring. The $106 million plant expects to employ up to 1,500 people, would be a major economic development for either Wayne or Nash counties. The jobs are expected to pay $11 an hour with benefits. It will be the company's second facility in North Carolina. Sanderson is building a similar chicken processing complex in Kinston that was scheduled to open earlier this year. The plants will also be a major boost for poultry farmers in the state, which had been hit by broad industry woes and weaker demand. Sanderson's Kinston plant will process 1.3 million chickens a week for the retail market. The second plant would process the same amount of larger chickens that are served by restaurants and other food service companies. The North Carolina plants will give Sanderson access to markets and customers in the Northeast, Cockrell said. John Gessman, president of the Carolina Gateway Partnership, the economic development agency for Nash and Edgecombe County, said the agency does not comment on prospects. Wayne County economic development officials said Sanderson gave Sanderson a list of target areas for the plant, said Joanna Helms, the president of the Wayne County Development Alliances. Helms said that while Wayne County would still love to get the project, Sanderson requires a site that meets a very specific set of infrastructure and environmental needs. In April, we learned that the Stephen Roberts Original Desserts and Tickleberry Desserts will open a bakery in Robeson County and create 342 jobs over the next 5 years. The Denver, Colorado-based company announced it will invest $4 million to purchase and renovate a facility in Pembroke. It's receiving a $392,000 grant from the One North Carolina Fund. The average annual wage for the new jobs will be $22,926 plus benefits, below the Robeson County average wage of $26,728. Stephen Roberts Original Desserts produces frozen desserts that sell to restaurants, hotels, theaters, and grocery stores. Tickleberry makes gourmet desserts. The new facility will be the company's third bakery and allow it to expand production and manufacturing capabilities. And in another of those series of questions that was submitted to Kathleen Purvis, the food editor of the New Charlotte Observer, was that she said, I've always added dried lima beans when I roast a brisket, and lately they don't soften no matter how long I cook them. And she said, the only change, I'm using a friend's brisket recipe that calls for bottled cherry sauce. And the answer was that she questioned whether how old the beans were. Another possibility would be hard water, but the biggest thing is probably the chili sauce, that there's something about the acidity in that would keep the beans from getting soft when they cook. And it's been said that most Americans do not drink enough fluids during the normal times. With extreme warm weather we've been experiencing, it's very important to drink more liquids. Without question, water, just plain H2O, is the best for us. So keep a pitcher of water in your refrigerator and drink plenty of water. Until next month, this has been Bob Kruger. Thank you.